Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Angelina Hurley on Let's Talk.
Good morning. Happy Friday, everyone. This is Angelina Hurley. We're on 98.9. And before we start off, I would like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we're on today, from where we're recording from, and from wherever our listeners are listening from. This morning, I have two really special guests who just happen to be my cousins, but keeping it in the family. But anyway, I have them in because I have really good yarns with them all the time about cultural awareness, and I have my cousin Tom Kirk, a cultural awareness facilitator, and Grant Paulson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, morning. My cousins. How are you going?
Yeah, good, cuss. Good, Angie, yeah.
Good to be here. We just minus the cafe cappuccino.
Yeah, yes. Missing the big breakfast, hey?
Yeah, that's the one.
On. The big breakfast and the coffees. Am I allowed to mention that? We have cuzzy catch-up all the time.
Yeah.
And as black fellas, we always need to debrief about stuff, hey?
Yeah.
So these are my debriefers, people.
Yeah. We're not laughing about any relations today.
No. Let's make that clear. We don't always catch up about family. We catch up about work issues, hey?
That's
sure.
Debriefing.
Born political.
So, for the audience, for the listeners out there, introduce yourselves, please. Go, Tom, you're the elder now.
Oh, hey, look out. Not yet. I'm a Kirk, so my dad's family were removed to Cherbourg. So my dad was born in Cherbourg, and that's Tom Senior, and my mum was born in Woorabinda. And so my mum passed now, so she born there. So my grandparents were both displaced to Cherbourg and Woorabinda. So I grew up around those communities as a child and in the country town of Jeringa. They also had rallies in Brisbane. Used to come here quite a bit for holidays and that too. But my language group is predominantly Gurang Gurang, which is, you know, inland from Bundy, north of the Burnett River. But we're more western group. We're not the coastal mob. But, you know, still part of the greater language group. That's on mum's side anyway. On dad's side, well, part of the greater Birragubba group from up north, the Burdekin district, but also from around the St. George area. That's where dad's father came from. But we don't know much about that area. But you know, born in Brisbane, go to Broncos, mad Broncos supporter and all that.
Yeah, you mean that, hey?
Yeah, Broncos is bought into the cultural awareness.
Already, 5 minutes in, cultural awareness, Broncos supporters.
We'd like to acknowledge
I got a jersey on. I got a jersey on under my shirt.
Hey, we might have that discussion later. That's another show.
But live in Brisbane now, been here a number of years. Love Brisbane. That's the place I call home now, that's for sure. So that's me in a nutshell, pretty much, yeah.
Well, me in a coconut shell, it's Grant Paulson here. And my mum is born on Cherbourg. She is a Kirk as well. Iris Kirk, now Paulson. She was born on Cherbourg. So everything Tom just shared about the Kirk side, just ditto for me about mum's side. All that Birra mob from up north, and I think that's the Gamilaroi out near the St. George area where all the Kirks are. Where old grandfather Kirk is from as well. My father's side are down at Fingal on the Tweed, so it's all that that Bundjalung area, but also his mob also includes ancestry from those cane cutters, that Kanaka mob that was brought across from Tanna Island. So, yeah, it's a literal coconut mob. So, so yeah, it's, so I'd like to acknowledge them as well and my family groups and also the family groups of all the people that are listening. We're all people that have come from somewhere and we've all been shaped for good or for bad by the people that have gone before us. So, yeah, we are products of people that have gone before.
Yeah. That's a So thanks for coming in, my cousins, because, you know, I really like our catch-ups and we call them cuzzy catch-ups because we debrief about stuff. But, you know, you always need that dialogue with your mob and your family. Yeah. About your life, about your work and stuff like that, and that happens with us all the time, and it's just not with girlfriends. I do it too with my, here to my male cousins, but we always talk about, and I like hearing, Tom, your stories about, tell us a little bit about your cultural awareness consultancy.
Well, I don't want to promote my business too much, but in that way, but yeah.
But you've been doing it for a long time.
A national consultancy. I've been doing it for, as a business since 2000, so 17 years all up, and go all over the country around the course. But I just promote them as basic introductory courses, you know, wherever I go. I don't speak for locals. I just make sure that I make sure we do that protocol proper. Sometimes I meet locals and explain what I'm doing and get that permission to speak, things like that. And, you know, those proper protocols. When I can, most of this with mining companies when there's land use agreements and those sort of things. But a lot of the time, I mean, I just go into an area and the locals don't even know I've been there, then I'm out again, you know, that sort of thing. So I just try and acknowledge them in the best way that I can and tell a bit of a story, you know, about that area.
Yeah, because cultural apprentice training sessions and practices kind of embedded in businesses.
Absolutely,
These days. So, you know, what is cultural awareness?
Well, you know, it's a broad thing because it's basically that making people aware of some of the main things that drive us as a default, you know. And in respect to, well, all peoples, we have the older stuff, the newer stuff, and all in between, you know. Mm-hmm. And all these things influence us, our perceptions, our behaviours, our ways of communicating, our attitudes, these sort of things, our values. And so, you know, when you try and deliver cultural awareness training, it's quite a broad topic in that regard.
Mm.
And so I try to steer away from giving people lists of do's and don'ts and things like that, but we mainly talk about how to make the cross-cultural engagement doable by providing principles that are universal, that sort of thing. So cultural awareness is, yes, acknowledging that, you know, there's one race, the human race, but we're all culturally different. We do the same things maybe, but we might do them differently. And the challenge is, you know, how do we manage that difference without managing differently,
yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so that's what I try and keep that as a basic sort of approach to cultural awareness training.
Mm.
Yeah. Because, you know, with us, you know, Aboriginal people, and, of course, with Torres Strait Islanders as well, is that our culture is quite a complicated thing, you know. It's we have, I guess, three broad blocks across a timeline that influence us. It's the pre-contact period, you know, in the which I refer to as the classic time, pre-1788. We have that contact period where we're all displaced, moved around against our will through government legislation, those sorts of that time. And then we have broadly the, you know, post-1967 period where we by default became citizens with that change to the Constitution, and we got more mobile, and then we're pioneering our ways through trying to engage with the dominant society on that level playing field, so to speak. And so when I try and facilitate awareness training, you've got to have the yarn across those three broad areas to give some insight into what makes people tick. And so, but also the other side of it is that I try and get participants to think about what makes them tick, you know, because that's where it all starts, at knowing yourself, how you operate, what influences your perceptions, your values, your ways of communicating, your attitudes and these types of things. So basically that's...
because the big gap really is the education gap, eh? I mean,
absolutely.
I feel like,
You know, they say you never assume, and it's true, you know. I mean, I did a course once, and one of the participants, you know, I was talking about, when we're on the reserves and we're on the missions and that, you know, talking like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just assume people knew what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And they could, after a while, one of the participants, I reckon, so, Tom, what was it like your family being in the army so much, you know?
The reserves.
We're in the army reserves and we're going on missions, you know? And I nearly fell off the chair. And so, you know, I had to explain that about these passes of land that we're quarantined on, so to speak.
It always surprises me that I've been guilty of the assumption thing too, forgetting about what point of education and history to start from when you're talking to non-Indigenous people. Sometimes I just assume sometimes that they've caught up to a certain level, and that lack of historical education about in us mob through through history is really tiring.
Well, you know, you just sort of assume that they have that same emotional intelligence that we have about history.
Yeah.
When I say they, I don't mean us and them in that way, but you know, people who are non-Indigenous often don't have that emotional intelligence about history and how that, things that are real, like transgenerational trauma, are real things, you know.
Yeah.
And it comes out in all sorts of ways.
Yeah. So, just depends what side of the bed I wake up on in the morning. If I've had coffee or not.
Well, even yarns like this is all part of the healing. You know,
well, that's
you get a chance to have a forum and have a yarn about things.
Yeah.
Most often people can't get that opportunity to yarn about stuff. But the thing is that, you know, in cultural awareness training, you know, workplaces, they give you, you know, 2 hours to do a session, 4 hours or a one day, something like this.
Mm.
And so you've got to cover all this stuff, you know, in such a little time. And
yeah.
So,
How many years of history to cover?
Well, just the yarn about identity is a full-day workshop on its own and things like that.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Well, saying that, cultural awareness is a bit of a back-to-reality moment, hey? So let's just hear a bit of Rochelle Watson. And I hear my cuz requested this song because you were a big bass player on this track, I hear.
Yeah, back in the day. Yeah.
Promote yourself.
It's my little 1990s claim to fame.
Your 15 minutes of fame?
Well, how long
playing on
this
Sister
track?
Rochelle's... 3 minutes, how long's this song?
Yeah. So this is it. So we're going to hear something that I played bass on a long time ago.
Rochelle Watson with Back to Reality.
Let's Talk on 98.9 FM with Angelina Hurley.
Oh, Deadly, that was the Deadliest bass playing, cuz, in that song.
Oh, thanks, don't that was over 20 years ago. Don't ask me to play that again.
So we're back. We're talking to Tom and Grant about cultural awareness. How do you think that plays out for the non-Indigenous community, Grant? What does it mean? I mean, you've been working for many years too, like Tom, in the area for Reconciliation Australia within community development, you know, along with World Vision and organisations like that. So what do you think it means for broader Australia?
Yeah, look, I feel in a funny place to speak on behalf of non-Indigenous Australians.
Oh, but from your experience, behalf of, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, I just think it's interesting listening to my big cousin here talking about his business for cultural awareness started 17 years ago, 2000, and 2000 was when we were all walking across bridges.
Yeah, right.
And it was a particular time in Australian history when there was people were saying, look, I probably don't know everything there is to know, but I know by walking across these bridges I want something better for Australia.
Yeah. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right, Cass.
He'll cut that out. I just thought it wasn't recording. Keep going. Sorry.
Make sure you press F8 now.
No. Go on. Go. Yeah, yes. So we were walking across bridges.
Yeah, we were walking across bridges, and that was a time when Australians that I felt wanted something better, wanted to make their mark in history for creating an inclusive kind of community. And I think cultural awareness is really important because it kind of like broadens the communication bridge, how we connect to each other. I mean, if we're all trying to walk across a little skinny bridge, a little mob can't move across us like it's very narrow. But we want a broadband. We want end-to-end bridge. We want to make it so accessible, and we have more places to communicate our aspirations, but to be able to have them understood and land.
Yeah.
So it's not about us necessarily agreeing on the same things, but it's certainly about hearing where they come from and then seeing how we might plan where we go together. Because I think a lot of Australians don't want their children to grow up in a place where Indigenous people are still disadvantaged.
Yeah.
A lot of Australians think in this day and age, I want my kids to grow up having knowledge of what the traditional languages are, who people come from. That's part of not just Indigenous heritage, that's part of Australia. Aboriginal people have always been wanting to share and invite people into our way of seeing this country, our way of seeing this land. And cultural awareness helps us helps bring other people into an Aboriginal worldview and Aboriginal sharing and Aboriginal ways of understanding, which we've been trying to invite people into since contact. So the other thing that's really important about cultural awareness understanding is ever since these things from Reconciliation Australia called the Reconciliation Action Plans, you know, talking about helping organisations embed two ways, you know, naturalise and normalise this way of working together. And that's where people like Tom have been really invaluable to help people think differently, imagine differently and work differently. And I think not that it takes away from how people used to be, but it actually enhances how we can be together as Australians with an Indigenous way of viewing and looking at stuff. So I think cultural awareness is not only about helping broader Australia understand the first peoples that were here, but it's also a tool to help us, you know, nation build and think together and dream together.
Yeah. So what are I always think on practical terms, but what are some of the things that you've seen come out of, because I can be, you know, a bit, what do you call it, cynical sometimes about, because, you know, this education and this cultural awareness stuff is a everyday long life, you know, exercise for us, and it'd be tiring and stuff. So sometimes I get despondent about, you know, that's actually anything positive is actually happening. So from your guys' perspectives, what, you know, positive things or practical things that have you seen come out of some of these discussions and training in that?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's easy to get cynical, I suppose, you know. Because some things are just hard to measure, you know.
Yeah.
People investing in relationships, it's hard to measure.
Yeah.
And often there's, in workplaces, there are no indicators that can, you know, pick that up to say that this is a part of progress within the organisation, that people are having meetings and having yarns, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm.
And that's the thing, you know. And
so how do we know it's working?
Well, what brings me to another topic is that a big thing about is how we operate, you know, and broad, and I'm not the first one to make this stuff up, so it's been around for a while, but broadly speaking, there's two approaches to engagement. There's a relationship approach and a task approach.
Mm.
And things go well or not so well from those same factors. You know, and so, for example, how you introduce yourself, do you say who I am and where I'm from, which is the relationship approach, or do you say, you know, what I am and what I do, which is more the task approach? There's no right or wrong, just how people are, you know. And so, you know, is it direct questioning or is it conversation? You know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And how do we engage?
Yeah.
And what people need to be aware of is what's their default?
Mm.
Are they mostly more a task type person?
Mm.
And that might be because of workplace demands, you know.
Mm.
Or are they more a relationship type person?
Yeah.
And so what they have to find that middle ground and modify that dominant way a bit more for practical purposes, you know. And so this is a bit of a real big part of cultural awareness training is that sort of realization, you know, because people operate better in one space more than the other.
Mm.
And as Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people, for a long time we've had the task approach imposed on us, and we have to be more direct and centralised business, you know, to get the one voice, you know, what's the one-stop shop for decision-making and representation, and what's the national voice, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And it's very difficult to get that because we don't come from that.
Yeah.
And just things that people take for granted, like, you know, from a classic situation, Aboriginal people, we don't come from a numbers system in that way. We have mathematics and we have weights and measures, you know.
Mm.
But most groups, as far as I know, in the classic times, wouldn't count beyond five. In fact, there's no word for it.
Mm.
In Gurang Gurang language, as far as I know, we've got a word for one, a word for two, three, you can put one and two together. Half of that, there's no word. We just say lots, heaps, you know, big mob. Big mob or not enough or greater than.
Yeah.
And so what happens, and over for thousands of years, children in their home place wouldn't put context into a story through numbers.
Yeah.
And so when they, in more recent times, people go to a school system, which is a script-based language, because we don't come from script-based languages either, Aboriginal people.
Mm.
You know, we have a language, but it's written differently.
Yeah.
You know, it's not script as far as writing letters of the alphabet. That's why a lot of Aboriginal languages are hard to spell, because there's no letters that can make the sounds right, you know.
Yes, impronounced, and
so,
yeah.
And so when kids, you know, are in a society that likes numbers to put context into a story, often they may not be able to relate to it well because they don't talk like that at home. You know, like so people forever ask me things like, so, Tom, what's the population of Warrabinda? You know, and I say, well, there's people everywhere, you know. You know, so I really don't know, you know, but they might say, what, 1,000 people? And I say, yeah, probably 1,000 people. I mean, I have no idea, but I just go along, you know, just to keep the relationship.
But my immediate thought is like, why is that important to you and why do you want to know that statistic? I don't understand
that's their cultural safety.
How do you address that stuff? Well, I kind of look at them and like, what?
Yeah, I know. Well, that's because they come from there's a risk of stereotyping, I'm generalising, but people from script-based societies with numbers, that gives them cultural safety.
Yeah.
The number puts the context into the story.
Mm.
You know, like someone might say, you know, how far is it from Rockhampton to Warrabinda? I just say, not far, in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And if you're like-minded, that's fair enough. But if you need a number to make sense of it, you might say, so you're saying, that's 200 kilometres? I say, yeah, 200 kilometres.
Yeah.
You know, was it cold on the morning event? Yeah, it was freezing. How cold was it? Mm. And someone waiting for a number, you say, does that cold have to put shoes on? That's how cold it was.
I know, I got in trouble for saying that the other day because we were going somewhere and someone said to me, how far is it? I said, just over here. And 10 minutes later, I said, just around here, just over here. And they were getting annoyed at me because they just kept saying, but to me it was. And it was just around the corner.
Mm.
But, yeah, they wanted it, you know.
Qualified.
And I just kept, it wasn't intentional. I wasn't making them follow me. It was just how it happened. But I, you know, that's...
Yeah, a little bit long way.
Yeah, a little bit. Yes, over
there. Well, that's, you know, like magistrates are supposed to talk about things when people take statements from Aboriginal people to, you know, create an environment where they're culturally safe.
Yeah.
And to reframe questions in a way that makes sense for them, you know. Because also that thing that we come from a collective model of management in the classic times, you know, where people indicate disagreement subtly by not participating, by withdrawing, you know, by not contributing.
Mm.
People aren't direct and vocal like, you know, have that robust debate. People are more likely to just sit back, you know.
Mm.
And so, you know, the magistrate should say, well, go back and do that again because good chance... Like if someone said to me, you know, how far is from Rockhampton to Warrabinda? And I said, it's a couple of hours. And they said, it's 200. I said, yeah, that's right. But I just go along with it, you know?
Yeah.
But it turned out it's 240 kilometres. I wonder why he lied about the other 40, you know? But it's not about, it's all about just investing in relationships a lot of times, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's a big cultural awareness issue, I think, how people have these bias sort of filters on how they engage, you know, type thing. And we come from that one of investing in relationships, you know. Like someone might say, well, so the 1,000 people at Warrabinda, I said, oh, probably, you know. What about Sherbourg, where your father grew up? I said, oh, it's bigger than Warrabinda, you know.
Yeah.
And they might say, oh, so how much bigger? 3 times bigger? I said, yeah, it might be. And they said, what's the 3,000 people at Sherbourg? I said, oh, yeah, could be. And so, you know, and, probably is.
Answer
you know?
That question, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's it. So someone might see it from one, exactly right. So someone might see me as being aloof or you know, not entirely honest or a little bit shifty or shy or lacking confidence or low self-esteem.
Yeah, or uncooperative.
Uncooperative, antisocial. And it might be those things. Or it could be just a default, you know, from a classic, you know, thousands of years of being diplomatic and indirect and not, you know, speaking in numbers and directly in that way, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Angelina, whole thing about does reconciliation work and how do we know? Social impact studies around numbers will only make sense to a certain community who want to qualify it and quantify it down to, or and I do know that Reconciliation Australia mob, they'll have a social impact study that talks about that, and we'll talk about metrics and measurements and trying to get that. But a lot of our mob, we want to know relationship. How am I feeling?
and that's a really important point that I want to come back to, and we'll keep talking about how we survive. Let's listen to No Fixed Address with We Have Survived.
Thank you.
You're tuned to Let's Talk, a weekly current affair program hosted by First Nations people for First Nations peoples. This is Chelsea Bond with Let's Talk.
So welcome back, everyone. I'm talking to Tom and Grant about cultural awareness and how us mob have survived all these years of colonisation through cultural awareness training. Hey, Ag. So, yeah, Grant.
Yeah, I think I was just saying before the song that we need measurements and based on relationships as well as the metrics and the numbers, you know, that that qualitative stuff as well as that, you know, all the numbers and tables. Although I think it's having an impact, I think, but change is really slow. We didn't get... It took 200
slow
and something years.
Understatement.
It took 200 years to get here. Over 200 years to get to currently where we were, and good change is painfully slow. And that and the fact that we've got social media now, and if I read every little troll, you know, when you read deadly things on the
on social media, social media, problematic.
And then you scroll down, and I know I shouldn't do it because I got so much other work doing today, and then I start reading these racist, sexist,
and you realise how behind we actually are. You think you're getting somewhere, and then you read some comments.
You know, I might feel good about reading the social impact study around this mob, and you know, we've got that much cultural awareness training. We put our staff through this. Employee numbers are up, and investment in Aboriginal procurement and businesses is up, and that's all great. Mm. And then you read other stats about child, you know, in child kids being taken away from their parents. Children in custody has jumped, and you've got that stuff that happened up in Northern Territory to children in custody up there.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking, oh, gosh, it's hard to hold these measurements together sometimes when you're looking at social media trolls and the fact that we've got more kids in custody now than we've had for a long time, and then you've got even with kids inside detention centres aren't necessarily treated very well at all. So there's certainly mixed feelings about how far we've come, because obviously we haven't got come far enough with some critical people, particularly the ones that are caring for our kids and making decisions about our children.
Or reading the news this week and just realising that people can't even get their heads around why you shouldn't walk on the rock.
Oh,
the news where...
Yeah. Aren't we all Australians? And look, I get that. The cultural awareness is really important to help people that see that rock is belonging to everybody, because I'm not climbing over that person's house and saying, well, doesn't this house, we're all Australian, can't I climb over the top of your roof and swim in your back pool, and can I just, you know, take selfies at the top of your church, and
can I strip off in front of your house with a selfie, and
I'll go to grandma's
in your front yard,
or go to the cemetery where your nana was buried, and you know, have a big party there. Those sorts of things need to be just brought out in the open to help find the human connection, because I think mob see us as a political box or object and not necessarily as people.
Yeah.
People with hearts and souls that are connected to place and space, and we just want to invite you into what it looks like for us, so you'll see when it hurts us.
Yeah.
So you can. We want to also tap that the goodwill in people outside of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander society, and that's why cultural awareness is. Because I think there's good in people if you want to find it, but there's also that allow themselves to see us not as political entities but relational ones.
Mm.
See us the way we see the world, you know, through relationships and connections.
Mm.
That's why walking on the rock is sacred. You don't just do things that other people ask you not to do.
Mm.
Like, you could flip that question and say, so why is it okay to waltz over people's hearts and minds and just desecrate it?
Mm.
And why is that okay? But, that's why I see the impact of cultural awareness is an ongoing challenge, because for every person who has got their hearts and minds broadened, there's a new generation growing up in a sense of... I didn't know that before. Why didn't anyone tell me? For all the education that I've sat through, and for all the people that have, for all the cultural awareness practitioners like Tom out there, there's forever someone saying, "I didn't know that. Nobody told me."
Yeah,
and you know that's true, and they don't draw the parallels about, you know, my home or sacred places like Uluru. You know, can't draw the parallels.
Yeah,
like this, and it's always this us and them conversation. You know, type thing, and. I mean, I don't know how much longer we've got on the interview, Angie, but there's that many things to talk about, you know. things we take for granted, like the concept of money, you know.
Well, really, go for it. We got heaps of time, my brother.
We're going to make that tea then.
Have a break and put that kettle on, because this is what it takes. Hey, it takes a long conversation and some guns and coffee and tea to stereotype.
Well, like the concept of money really...
We should have had this in your kitchen.
The concept of money really changes people's values, you know.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
It changes the priorities for that matter. And we survive for so long in isolation to the rest of the world through investing in relationships. Now, we had trade, that's true. But the trade is not, you know, I expect this material gain, you know, or I expect this material sort of exchange. It's more, like Grant said, a goodwill thing. Mm. And, you know, you can have this because I know you do that for me. It's a reciprocity obligation.
Yeah.
And even if you don't give me anything in return, I know that you would if you could.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this year's host might be next year's guest. You know, that sort of stuff. And so we're challenged daily with this, and that, as all people are around the world, about what gives you a quality of life. Is it my material gain or my relationships, you know?
Yeah.
And this is, we're all challenged with that, but it's a big challenge for us in a big way. You know, the word for money in Gurang is dakil, from the Western Mobin, and that literally means stone or pebble. In one of my grandfathers on mum's side, the word is yandra, which literally means stone or pebble.
Yeah.
So I just assumed that the old people saw pennies and said, we'll call it this.
Yeah.
You know, but we've never had money. You know, there's no value for precious gems or precious metals, or these things mean nothing, you know. And there's trade routes that go quite some distance where there's been archaeological finds of certain things that aren't from that area being passed on, you know. Coral spearheads found in Central Australia, certain types of materials found at, you know, sacred sites that are from, you know, 500 kilometres away. But it's the thing is, it's passed on and the exchange is goodwill. You know, I don't try to make a profit out of this exchange. I don't try and barter a better deal. The only exchange between us is, I know you would do that for me.
Yeah.
You know, and so then post-1967, when we're sort of allowed to manage our own money, you know.
Sort of allowed.
Because prior to that, it's all managed in the welfare fund, et cetera, you know. And so we have that classic times where we don't have money.
Yeah.
We have that, oh, we'll invent words for it, money.
Yeah.
And then it's managed by others when we're in missions and reserves, you know.
Yeah.
And then post-67, a day away, average people, off you go and manage your own affairs financially, you know.
Yeah.
And
good
forward planning with your finances. Set up a financial base and a financial future and understand interest and home loans and, you know, all these types of things and investment. And that's why, you know, I don't begrudge anybody, but and all the best everybody, but all new Australians, since they've arrived, since 1788, have gone past us setting up that financial base and financial future, because people have come here with the disciplines of the culture of money.
Yeah.
Now, everyone struggles with money, that's true, but it's a relatively new thing for us. You know, we've been here the longest. We should have this real estate locked up, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Making money out of it.
Well, there was a non-level playing field right there with our land get style taken from us, you know. Well, that's there it is.
That classic sign by Kevin Carmody, this land is mine, it's called, or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, where you have the non-Indigenous person saying, this land is mine, you know. And Kevin Carmody comes in and says, this land is me.
Yeah.
You know, a whole different concept. In fact, the term traditional owner is probably technically incorrect, but we use that term, I don't know for what reason, strategic, and other cultures recognise that connection to land, ownership. But, you know, the land is me, I speak for it.
Yeah.
I don't own it to the exclusion of all others. And unfortunately, and I'm not going to get into this too much, but a lot of Aboriginal groups are going in that selfish, materialistic thinking about land now. Mm. It's mine, you're on that side, I'm on this side, you know. And it's caused a lot of disharmony amongst families, that sort of... that clash of values, you know?
Yes. Mm. Well, that's a good segue, and let's maybe should remind ourselves about that with, let's hear from Uncle Kev in that day or so.
This land is mine, all the way to the old fence line. Every break of day, I'm working hard just to make it pay. This land is mine. Yeah, I signed on the dotted line. Campfires on the creek bed, bank breathing down my neck. They won't take it away, they won't take it away, they won't take it away from me.
my song, my being's here where I belong. This land owns me from generations past to infinity. We're all but woman and man. You only fear what you don't understand. They won't take it away. They won't take it away. They won't take it away from me.
This land is mine.
This land is me. This land owns me.
This land is mine.
This land is me.
They won't take it away.
They won't take it away. They won't take it away from me.
This is Let's Talk on 98.9 FM with Angelina Hurley.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking everything from cultural awareness to land rights now. Hey, Meg.
That's what happens.
You feel like you need to...
So much stuff.
Yeah. Talk really fast.
Yeah, I'm just waiting.
You're thinking. And you can interject any time.
Into something anyway. I was just thinking the importance of where cultural awareness takes us from here. Particularly with what Tom said about, you know, the way some of our community is going. It's, I know he's saying it doesn't want to sound controversial, but it seems like we also need to be reminded of ourselves with the new generations that are growing up and rediscovering people, finding out that their grandparents were taken and retracing down their roots. I think there's a kind of cultural awareness that we need for our own descendants to make sure our young people still remember and our young people still know how to address their elders and all those sorts of things. We've got fast shifting changes. We need cultural awareness inside our communities. But we've also invested in a lot of non-Indigenous people too, and I think if there are non-Indigenous listeners out there that have been through cultural awareness, I want to encourage them to broaden that awareness to the people in their families, at their Christmas conversations and you know, at meal times with their loved ones. We can't expect people like Tom and other cultural awareness practitioners.
Or your Indigenous staff members.
Or your Indigenous staff members in your organisations to suddenly convert everybody to social inclusion.
Social inclusion
is everybody's responsibility.
That's right. I was having this conversation with someone just the other day about now it's not enough just to gain this information. There has to be engagement.
Yeah, we have to find ways. It just, in the same way that, you know, gender-based violence is everybody else, is everybody's responsibility. You wouldn't turn around and tell a victim to say, oh, you know, you're responsible for your own safety and the men get off scot-free. It's everyone's responsibility. In the same way, I think cultural awareness and once you've known something, once you see something differently, I think there's a duty of care to our broader sense of community to pass that on and to share it. And I think for young people, who particularly if you've discovered that your nana or your great pop is, Bunjalung or, you know, Waka Waka or something, it's your responsibility to find out what that means.
Absolutely.
We can't gam and make it up as we go along.
Yeah.
Cultural awareness is about also taking charge. And it's also about learning to hold it in respectful ways, because I've also seen, and this is something that Tom, I might get you to comment on, but sometimes mob, we hold our culture like a weapon. And, you know, we use that to in certain community meetings. I am more tribal man than you, or more cultural. Sit down and shut up. You're only young. I changed your nappy. I'm your older cousin. You know? So there's ways in which we can hold it, cultural awareness within family, that it builds us up and not... seeks to pit us against one another.
Well, that's it. See, that's all part of the pioneering, is we're sort of pioneering our way through these new status structures within families and things like this, you know, and so we'll work it out. We'll get there. And I think that's why the non-Indigenous community find a bit frustrating as well, is that they expect us to have the certainty to tell them what to do, when to turn left and when to turn right. And a lot of the time we're still working that through.
Yeah.
You know, we're pioneering stuff. I mean, like us, three sitting here now, we're the first generations outside the reserve systems.
Yeah.
You know, the ones born from the 60s and onwards.
Yeah.
We're all the new ones outside the reserve. Certainly, we call them communities today, and a lot of issues are still there.
Mm.
There's no doubt about that. But, you know, we're the first ones to get access and opportunities to, you know, raise our awareness, to get some knowledge and skills about how to function within this dominant society of the non-Indigenous community, you know, and try to how to engage with these biased sort of filters that people have to, you know, and we all do this, but to some degree, I suppose. But, yeah, we're the first ones. And so, and that's why we are part of acknowledging people, place and country, is that, you know, we get privileges today that the old people, you know, set up for us, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's all we're pioneering on the back of that too.
You know? I can still remember orientation at UQ back in 19, I don't know if it was 88 or something like that. And one of them aunties got up there and grilled us. She said, "Don't think your little snotty-nosed Murray's got here because you're all smart." You got here because we marched, we advocated, we got locked up.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And there's plenty of smart Murrays come before you, but you guys have access in here because it's paid for by our advocacy and our generation.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, "Oh, auntie, you gunned us. We just got here."
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, we're all the first to year 12. When we went to uni, we just looked for all the brown faces and the big sea of lecture theatres.
Yeah.
But and I remembered feeling scared and intimidated. But now and later, you know, as I've grown older, she was speaking truth. And we really need to remember that we're not products of our own gifting and skills, but we're also products of what people have done to enable doorways and to be open for us.
Absolutely,
Yeah.
And never forget that. Never take that for granted, you know, because
we
got it easy compared to people before us, that's for sure.
That's exactly right.
But relatively speaking, we still got it tough, you know, there's no doubt about that.
Mm.
But, you know, we had a lot of the pathways set up for us.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, and the thing is that also what I found when providing training or facilitating training in that area, cultural awareness, is that people just assume, have a very closed mind about what culture is, you know. And that's not only non-Indigenous people, it's even Indigenous people as well, Aboriginal people. And that it's more than bush tucker and walking on land, you know, and this artefact. Yeah. And
dotted football jerseys, no gammon.
Yeah, exactly, dotted football jerseys or dot art or didgeridoo playing or whatever it may be. There's more to it. It's a whole way of life. It's how we govern ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, residency rules and...
Yeah,
all these sort of things. How we operate within community organisations, and you know, Grant's area of community development that he'd worked with for a long time. I mean, we're all trying to redefine what that is, you know.
Yeah,
and it's culture is a lot of things. It's how we grade ourselves and our age grading, you know, how we dress, you know, foods we eat, what we eat, what we don't eat, our non-negotiables, our negotiables, you know, partnerships, marriage, you know, all these sort of things, everything. Is culture. I mean, they've got a whole list of them on one of the PowerPoint slides that I show, and people just assume that it's just this and just that, but it's actually everything, you know. And you try and get some insight into what makes people tick. There's a lot of stuff to consider, and the big one with us is kinship.
Yeah,
you know, and it's huge, you know,
and
that sort of kinship governance, you know, it's very strong.
Yeah,
still today. But the thing that I also present as well is that things like, and I wouldn't be the only one that would. Present this sort of stuff, is that, you know, we have the classic time, you know, if you want to draw a sliding scale at one end, and at the other end would be today, you know, modern day cosmopolitan sort of lifestyle.
Yeah.
And we're all in between that.
Mm.
And what one day we might be here sitting in front of this radio, you know, microphone, and as soon as we leave out of here, we slide straight along to the classic, you know, with things that we have as imprints, as defaults.
I absolutely agree, and I think that the cultural default that the eldest cousin looks after the younger ones is important, especially because
he's
shouting coffee after.
Good go, he reckons. Look at the look on his face. hang on.
We're
going off track.
It's
the young one's supposed to, you look after the older one. You got that wrong, do you?
I'm the baby. Look out!
Hey, look at it! I'm stuck.
And I'm not even old yet.
But anyway, rounding up, Cuzzies, what do you reckon for the future?
I reckon we still need to learn that I think we always need to go back to the past to remember who we are now, and have that inform us as we explore the future. Cultural awareness is about ongoing remembrance. It's not just about once upon a time, but it's about retelling, re-remembering. I mean, mainstream has this too. It's not just an exclusive Aboriginal thing. How many times has Anzac been retold and revived and, you know?
Yeah.
There was even a big picture of our great-grandfather, Frank Fisher, on ABC's website. So there's that need to be able to remember the traditions that have shaped us and make us who we are and how we see ourselves going into the future. That's why cultural awareness is important, to know about ourselves, the original mob, and who we want to be as Aboriginal people, but also who we want to be as Australians.
Yeah.
Yeah, I back that up all the way, Bush. That's for sure. It's an ongoing, it's a standing agenda, you know, to keeping our awareness raised, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
A lot of clients talk about, well, we've done cultural awareness training now, we want to talk about capabilities and competency.
Yeah.
You know, and I say, well, that's your role.
Yes,
you know,
right.
My role is to facilitate a day of awareness.
Yeah.
It's your role to say, well, where do we take that?
That's it.
How do I improve my competency and my capability in a cross-cultural environment, you know, and have better dealings in that with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples? And it's them, you know, and they have to work that out themselves.
That's right.
I certainly can facilitate a journey for them.
Yeah.
But they have to come with those decisions, you know, the people.
Yeah.
And so it's ongoing, but if people want to be competent and capable, they have to have awareness as an ongoing component in their workplace, you know, or wherever. That's for sure. And, you know, one thing we never even covered today in much, really, is how we are all reculturalizing. You know, we haven't even touched on that.
Yeah.
How a lot of groups around Australia, to quote one of our rallies, said the culture is broken, you know. Mm. And so there's no reference from the classic, you know, to say how were we before non-Indigenous people came here.
Yeah.
And so we're very active grabbing snippets from other Aboriginal people around the country who may have had late contact or have still got a resource, a reference, and we're folding that into how we present ourselves with our identity. And also modern day things like the flags, you know, the Torres Strait Islander flag, the Aboriginal flag, and we in the colour red, black and yellow, whatever it may be, you know, and we're putting that forward as how, and a lot of the younger people, the youth that I work with who are in care and stuff, I mean, they're really confused about what Aboriginality means, you know?
Yeah.
They don't know. Anyway, so that's another yarn for another topic.
That's another big show. But thank you, my cousins, for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
You can see why I love talking to these two fellas.
Totally.
And why our cozy catch-up breakfast is about at least 3 hours long, huh?
They're wiping the tables up and putting the chairs up.
Time to leave, lights out.
And while we're here, we should put a shout-out to all the relatives who owe us money. That's
Hey, look out. You're getting right down to it now.
I said I got the next one.
Until next time, thanks, everyone, and let's go out with a really popular Blackfellas song, hey? Uncle Bob with Redemption Song. Thank you, guys.
Old pirates, yes, they rob I, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look?
Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption songs. All I ever had, redemption songs. These songs of freedom. Songs of freedom.